Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling.
Well,
we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins alongside Chris Novembrino. And what a weekend you have if you like wrestling, because there's a lot of stuff to choose from. New Japan has a show. SmackDown hasn't aired yet as of this taping. Rampage, Battle of the Belts, Impact's Bound for Glory, Extreme Rules on Saturday, which we will preview later. GCW, if that's your thing, because Moxley and Nick Gage are having a match that's very, very interesting, because it turns out it seems to be title versus retirement. So who knows?
And let's not bury the lead here, Hawkins. I am going to be at 8 Airs on Sunday and Saturday night this week. So come on out, 6 p.m. on Saturday and 10 to 1 on Sunday. What a weekend.
In silly news, rest in peace, Judy Tenuta, who... just one of the most fantastic stand-up comedians of the late 80s, early 90s. Boom there. Chris, are you aware of Judy Tenuta's work at all?
Name rings a bell, but no.
Okay. Well, Judy Tenuta, I suggest everybody go seek out her late 80s stuff. She is pure gimmick. As I like to say, there are two types of stand-ups. There's material stand-ups and there's delivery stand-ups. She is pure delivery stand-up. But there's a weird, and when you watch it now, there's a weird hyper-feminist vibe to what she does, because her whole thing was, she is a goddess, she has a religion called Judaism, and all men will be her sex slaves. And that is her gimmick, and it is fantastic. And she just, I mean, her material is, anytime, I mean, there are like 8 million stand-up shows in like the late 80s that you could watch. Anytime Judy Tenuta was on it, you needed to watch it. She had an accordion, which she called her IUD, which is funny in its own right. She did a lot of work with Weird Al in later years, too. I guess they had the accordion thing in common. He tweeted something about her. But yeah, she is crazy as a crap house rat, but could not have been a nicer woman. Died at age 72 of ovarian cancer here in Sherman Oaks, California. We are brought to you this week by HelloFresh. More on them later. Getting to the news now, staying on the kind of the sad news, and we'll get off of that rather quickly. But Tough Enough 2015 women's champ Sarah Lee passed away yesterday at age 30, according to a Facebook post from her mom. 2 days earlier, she had posted on Instagram that she was back in the gym after a sinus infection. No cause of death revealed. I don't think any cause of death will be revealed. I'm kind of hoping no cause of death is revealed, but we'll see. Her husband, oddly enough, if those of you who don't know, is Wesley Blake, ex of NXT, and has done some AEW work, and she leaves behind 3 kids. The entire wrestling community loved this woman, apparently, because that Tough Enough was interesting, because it mostly brought in talent. In terms of those who lasted, the talent on the women's side was that lasted. Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose, and Chelsea Green were all on that show together, but the GoFundMe has far surpassed anything going, but just absolutely gobsmacked. Sarah Lee did not last too long after she got her NXT contract. I believe the order was that she was dating Wesley and got pregnant and then just decided to be a family woman after that. But were you aware of 2015 Tough Enough, or was that?
Yeah, I was captioning at that time.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah. No, this is the season I captioned. So, no, I definitely remember Sarah Lee.
Was the men's women quiet, or the men's winner Quiet Storm, or am I misremembering thing?
Ooh.
I think I'm misremembering, to be honest with you, but I just remember that women.
Was this a year after Velveteen Dream?
No, Velveteen Dream was on that season.
It was on that season.
That's right. Patrick Clark was on that season,
yep,
too. I forget that sometimes. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's more talent than usually comes out of a bunch of people who don't have wrestling experience tough enough. But yeah, I remember. It was so weird, the arguments people would have between, at the time, Amanda, who would later become Mandy Rose, and Sarah Lee as to who was the more marketable talent between the two of them.
Right. Yes. I remember that, too, because, like, Sarah Lee's whole sort of thing was, like, kind of like a roughneck-y thing, right?
Yeah. Very country girl.
Yeah, country girl.
Type of thing, including wrestling in jorts. Which, or cutoffs, Daisy Dukes, my fault.
That's a classic.
Always a sign, and always a sign that Vince is not going to push you at all because you're a hill.
No. The second you get the trailer gimmick, you're in Vince's world. You think about all the psychological baggage that Vince has with the trailer.
Because of his North Carolina time. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I remember Nydia had that same gimmick coming out of Tough Enough and just died after a while. Other news, Rob Fee, 8 mutual friends on Facebook for me, was hired as director of long form creative for WWE. This is a fascinating position because they've had positions like this, offered before. It was, you know, originally I remember I applied for this a couple years back, I think, because it was, but they said on the job, you don't get to participate in any creative meetings, or your pitches will not be heard, or something like that.
I thought the whole gimmick that you were was a continuity guy.
Well, that's what this is. Yeah. I think is director. The problem is there's a, I think it's like director of lore and long term creative, and of course all the anti WWE people. Oh, God, the Fiend and all these other things, because Rob Fee also pitched a Fiend movie, which WWE officials were very, very high on at the time. A lot of people kind of complain about his credentials being a little fluffed. They are, because I mean the articles say, well, of Marvel and Disney fame, and you know he was a part of a couple of one shots as I think like a story guy or maybe even a continuity guy. But I'm willing to see what this does. I have a friend who currently has a similar position at Legendary, which has all the IP for all the Japanese monsters like Godzilla and King Kong and stuff. And he is the director. I mean, he's the guy who basically has created the character Bible for that. And look, most TV shows have character Bibles and things like that to so that they don't do something that's antithetical to a character, what they've done. Now in WWE, that'd be hell on earth to me if they did it. And I don't know if this guy's gonna be able to
pitch. But they also, it's not quite as burdensome, but no, totally. I mean, for television series, especially if you're gonna do multiple seasons or whatever, you need to make sure that especially when you have like an extended cast, that you have the general background of all of these characters written down far beyond what you're actually going to put on the screen, just to make sure you don't accidentally cross a wire and create some weird inconsistency that you're stuck and locked into once you finish filming it. But the nice part for WWE is if they miss a few beats here and there, it's okay, and you can always selectively edit and bring back up what matters. But like, to me, what excites me about this position potentially is that maybe it will result in longer form angles starting, you know, meta storylines that carry on for multiple weeks and that sort of thing. And WWE seems to be moving a bit in that direction, and I think that, at least for my interest in a wrestling program, there needs to be a sense of, like, broader story from week to week, that I'm watching the next chapter in something rather than just this week's offering.
Yeah, the yin and yang are interesting here, because the good part of this is you might get, you know, someone helping the showrunner, someone forming long-term storylines and angles and things like that, you know, continuity, things that aren't against characters, et cetera, et cetera. The bad part of this is you get more and more things like the former Aleister Black stories, or we go deep into the Fiend lore necessarily, and you know, all the fake occult and magic stuff.
I know there are people
stuff.
Who don't like that, but the thing is, there are people who clearly do.
Yes, there are. There are.
I'm not one of these people who's spending my time trying to decipher all the Fiend puzzles, but people clearly are.
I'm fine with the Fiend puzzles. I
think it's great. I think it's good. Anything that gets people engaged in a character.
Yeah,
I think
it's interactive. It's fine. I'm just talking, you know, how we had the story of the Fiend and Randy Orton, where he's burning down a house and posing in front of the burned down house and all those other things. And you're just like, that's the bad part of WWE instincts at times. And because they do still think of themselves as a movie maker. So it's just one of those things where it's like, you got to take the good with the bad, but I'm willing to give this a chance, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, over at AEW, if you've been living under a rock, You will not have heard that there was a backstage incident. There was an incident, as Kramer on Seinfeld would say, between Andrade and Sammy Guevara, stemming from Andrade on a podcast basically saying he wasn't going to talk about things and then spilling the tea when it came to Sammy Guevara complained about how hard Andrade hit him in a match. And Andrade was kind of saying, hey, nobody's ever really complained about it. You know, and I've worked with guys like Cena and stuff like that. It's just hit me back type of a thing. Well, Sammy then gets on Twitter and starts saying things like, oh, I'll see you on Wednesday. And then Andrade goes, yeah, you'll see me on Wednesday. And then they saw each other on Wednesday. And Andrade basically decked him, if depending on who you believe. TMZ. Very sympathetic to Andrade's side of the story, saying both were throwing punches. Andrade sent home. Sammy, of course, was part of the main event on Wednesday, which is a interesting message to send. But, yeah, and now all the rumors and blah, 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 because also on this podcast, basically Andrade was saying, hey, if I need to send feelers to the WWE, I can do it through my wife at any times, which I'm sure ruffled a few feathers. And I believe Sammy also tweeted that Andrade was nothing but a jobber who couldn't get over now in two companies. Always great. Sammy, look, I also take the point of view that maybe Sammy's trying to angle for a way out at times because he's good friends with Cody. If he's not, he has a history of problematic issues with coworkers, shall we say. But yes, and of course, it's up to Tony Khan now to clean up this entire mess. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, that's where we need to begin. Tony Khan. So here we are again talking about a situation that was coming up, and you could see it up ahead on the highway, and Tony Khan just let it come into view until the car hit the obstacle in the road. Head on once again. This is all aired out in public, and Khan needs to get a lid on this stuff. Once you start seeing all these exchanges, the idea that he's completely oblivious to it, I don't really believe it, but if you do believe it, then what does that say about like the inner workings in terms of management of AEW, that they're like not aware of this very public beef that like is more or less like, want to fight on Wednesday? Yeah, sure, sounds good. Let's fight on Wednesday. Okay, see you on Wednesday for the fight.
20 seconds after this first tweet went out, there should have been a text in Sammy's phone going, you delete this and shut up.
Delete this immediately.
Or you're fired.
If AEW people aren't getting this to Khan and going, hey, this just got tweeted out, and Khan's not sending off that tweet, that's a big problem. And I'm going to go one step further, a little bit speculative here, but just connecting a few dots here. Especially the nature of the beef and Khan's relationship with Sammy Guevara. I would say he's too cozy with this worker, this employee of his, going to the guy's wedding. They're clearly friendly. And the beef here that Sammy is, you know, trying to, like, vent on is, oh, you want to leave Tony Khan to go to AEW. You want to betray Tony. He's not saying it like that. But, like, in between the lines, that's sort of what's going on here. And it sure is interesting that as a result of these little beats, Sammy Guevara still manages to be on TV and gets, you know, gets a featured match. He's in the main event. He gets the pinfall. He wins. I just, like, this to me is a big failure of Tony Khan. Before we ever get into, you know, Sammy, Andrade, the nature of their beef, Sammy as a sustaining problematic figure. Oh, last part here, though, that's worth thinking about. At the same time as the Sammy Guevara thing's happening, you know, who is getting increased influence in the backstage? Chris Jericho, who is one of Jericho's, you know, buddy buddies. Well, that would be none other than Sammy Guevara. So don't think, I don't know, man. I'm just, like, looking at all this stuff and wondering, was Khan low-key okay with Sammy beefing with Andrade because it was, like, you know, kind of weirdly cathartic for Tony? And if so, that's a huge management failure. Now, that's speculative. Let's end that thought with, this is, again, a speculative thought, but this is a guy, Tony Khan, who has a clear issue with being able to manage his company. Way too okay with backstage conflict, and not any good at diffusing it. Not any good at diffusing it at all. And when you're thinking about the outlook of this company for year four and onward, so much of this, you know, goes to the question of, does Tony Khan figure out how to be a better manager than this? If yes, the future can be brighter. If no, I think the future is fairly bleak. I think you can only have so many of these little blow-ups before you really start damaging the company.
To steal a bit from Nick Bakay, dummy. Called the tail of the tape from ESPN from years back. Lest anybody think I am being more sympathetic to Andrade than I am to Sammy Guevara, push. There are no winners here. Andrade, far be it from me to say that a guy in a faction called Los Ingobernables becoming ungovernable might have an attitude problem. yes, he has.
It's also not lost on me the irony that he is currently involved in a contract tampering, like, storyline on screen.
Yes, yes. Because we're using that. We're using real life heat for our angles backstage, which might then feed the real life heat. Oh, look, it's a Tesla coil of suck. It's just, Andrade has been a malcontent almost everywhere he's worked. It's one of those things where this is who he is, and he's going to defend himself because he's the product. And you kind of understand that. God knows if he ends up leaving and Roosh has just signed, how Roosh is going to act now. You know, it's, and Bandito just signed, which, I, you know, that's a story for later, but whatever. But then you get over to Sammy, and Sammy, you know, Sammy had the incident with Sasha Banks. Sammy had the incident with Impact Wrestling where he was lent out and then didn't want to do the job. Had the incident a few weeks ago with Eddie Kingston. And now here we are. Just like, yeah. And again, it's you're exactly correct. This is a, I need to set the corporate tone type of thing, that this kind of crap will not be tolerated. Because everybody else looks at it and goes, well, let's see how far I can push it too now. And it's just...
If you're still looking at the CM Punk Bucks and Omega thing and thinking it was Punk or the Bucks or Omega who is the clear, like, main source of the problem, I can't help you at this point. Like, this is... The buck stops with Khan.
And if
he's the guy.
And the other thing is, if that thing is dealt with swiftly, this stuff probably doesn't happen.
Right. By and this is a ripple effect of Tony Khan presenting weakness in the face of that. Oh yeah, he's got everyone suspended. Oh, this is so strong. Now the more that suspension goes on, the weaker that looks. Now I get that some of that's because there's a pending lawsuit and all of that, but it just, he is projecting weakness on a constant level, and it makes it really hard for me to like think about the outlook of this company with in any other context. And like, does Khan figure out a way to overcome this steady projection of weakness? Yeah. I don't know that he does.
Moving on, far be it from, or not far be it, unbeknownst to me, I did not realize that WWE had a season, but apparently next week is the season premiere.
No, they do. Yeah, they do. And this I did know.
Well, I know they have seasons, but usually, you know, they always do this in the fall, which is ridiculous because it's not like a real TV show. The time their season should reset is right after WrestleMania, because that's when everything is blown off. But no, and we're getting new broadcast teams. SmackDown team, which will start on October 7th, which is tonight, for those who haven't watched yet, in Worcester, Massachusetts, will be Michael Cole and Wade Barrett, with Samantha Irvin as ring announcer and Kayla Braxton and Megan Morant doing the backstage interviews. Pat McAfee will rejoin the team in January after college foosball is over, but it's not clear whether or not it will be a three-man booth or not. Over on Raw, Kevin Patrick replacing Jimmy Smith as the lead announcer on Raw with the October 10th show at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Jimmy Smith let go by the promotion. Corey Graves will remain as the color commentator, while Byron Saxton will be removed from commentary and moved to being a backstage interview along with the returning Kathy Kelly, who's coming back. Vic Joseph and Booker T will be the commentators on NXT, with Mackenzie Mitchell handling backstage duties and Alicia Taylor being ring announcer. Also coming out today, Nigel McGuinness let go by the company. Chris, since it's obvious you had not heard this about Jimmy Smith, your thoughts on the new broadcast teams?
Jimmy Smith, I think, really did a fantastic job in his time there.
I fully agree.
I know, like that, it sounds really a fantastic job.
They had
tried that Adnan Virk thing.
Yes.
It crashed and burned. They, at that particular moment, so desperately needed somebody to come in and stabilize that booth and actually get the role. And Smith, within a month, like, fit, like, you know, hand in glove, dude. I think he actually started to get looser too. As time went on,
when McMahon left, he got looser.
Yeah, he started to establish rapport with the guy. I just thought Jimmy Smith was a very, very good announcer, very gifted.
I had to warm up to him a bit, admittedly, because I just thought he was just, he's so vanilla, he's not bringing
I didn't think he was going
to
last either, and then, like, he completely won me over. Superlatives.
You know where he won me over was the technical aspects of fighting that he brought into the wrestling commentary. I thought he was very good at doing that, because he's an MMA guy, so he could do those types of things. I thought he was really good at that. I'm a little shocked that he was let go. Overall, because, I mean, he was so new to the job. You can tell that this is not Vince McMahon running the show anymore, because he would never let a guy like Kevin Patrick be his lead play-by-play guy on his A show.
This is the British guy, right?
The Irish guy, yeah.
The Irish guy, yeah. Sorry, guys. The Irish, yeah, no. I mean, he's a fine backstage presence, but, like, lead announcer on Raw.
I've
just never heard. I mean, maybe he gets in the booth and he just has a presence that I have missed backstage. But thinking about his voice as the lead voice in the booth, it doesn't work for me, dog.
He is perfectly fine as a backstage happy-go-lucky type of backstage.
He's Irish Byron.
Yes. No, that pretty much nails it right there. I can't do a better comparison there. He is Irish Byron. Exactly. Okay. I'm not even going to try and explain that. The one that I hate, absolutely, is actually one of the better commentary teams overall. Three-fourths of them are great. Vic Joseph is great. Mackenzie Mitchell is fantastic. I don't know how much people watch of her and her reactions to people when they say things, But as a Dasha bot, she is one of the best that they've ever had doing the gig, because she reacts to things. She's almost to the point of pushing back on things at times, even though she's not really allowed to. But her mannerisms are just absolutely fantastic. And Alicia Taylor is just absolutely solid as a ring announcer for NXT and really sets a tone for them. Booker T stinks on commentary.
He's terrible.
He's dreadful. And
he is so bad. I used to caption him, Jeff. Like, he's...
Oh, God.
No. Like, I know Booker T's commentary very, very, very well. He is not good at it. Like all he's got... He came up with the... I was captioning him when he came up with the shucky ducky quack,
which he took from terrible comedian Shucky Duck.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. I remember when he first ran that thing up the flagpole and decided that it flew. He's startlingly ungifted at commentary. It's striking, really.
I just thought, okay, within 3 weeks, they're going to know that he's not good at this and he needs help. And they're going to want to bring in Nigel to help him, because Nigel is there, man, and he ain't doing nothing. He was great on NXT when he was there. But it's just, and then they'd say, oh, we released him too. I'm like, dude, if he can get cleared to wrestle again, AEW will be thankful to have him, especially with this Ring of Honor resurgence type of thing. Oh, and by the way, on the Shucky Duck thing, if you ever want something, go listen to a video on YouTube. But I think it's Jim Norton and a couple other comedians talking about Shucky Duck and Hamburger Jones. I don't know if you're aware of Hamburger Jones from Def Comedy Jam, where all his transitions were hamburger.
Yes. Hamburger.
Hamburger.
Yes. Yes.
Listen, hamburger.
No, he's basically a wrestling gimmick more than
a
comedian.
Yes, he is. He's totally a wrestling. He is a delivery comic. Totally. Yes. He has no material, but all
no
he has
material
at all.
Hamburger. Yeah, no, and like, it's hard to explain why it's even funny, but it's one of these things. He gets it over.
It's quintessential
getting it over
the
stuff.
The first three times you don't like it, and then like on the 14th time, it's just become so ridiculous you're laughing at it. It's the law of Steve Martin, I think, calls it the law of threes or 300s. He is the law of 300s. Just hamburger.
It's just like everything comes back around to hamburger, and it does, because it's such a nonsensical phrase, it doesn't make it's such a strange thing.
I am going to be very interested who in their Rolodex they can possibly bring in to help Booker T on commentary, because they don't have anybody on the roster. They don't have anybody on the roster on the color side, because all I'm thinking is like Beth Phoenix. God help us.
Beth Phoenix. Booker T makes Beth Phoenix seem like Mean Gene Okerlund.
Beth Phoenix screaming random run-on sentences. Booker T. Oh, I like her. just saying heelish things as a babyface commentator
sometimes he'll be like, sometimes you need to cheat, and you're like, wait, what?
I'm okay. Let's speculate. Who do they put on commentary as a third person who is in system or somebody they can bring in?
So like, yeah. How long does Booker last? Is the real question here. I'm gonna say under a month. You think Booker? Okay, he does sometimes land these jobs and stay there way beyond reason.
No, they keep him and they add a third person to the booth. Because remember, they did this on SmackDown with him, I think, or Raw. I can't remember. He was like, he was the second guy, and then they added a third guy really, really quickly.
Right.
And then eventually he got fired when they reshuffled again. I'll go out on a limb because he's at the Performance Center. I'll say Road Dogg ends up on commentary along with Booker T to help him within a month.
Maybe who's that little like Vic stunt double? Shaw, whatever.
Oh, the guy who does NXT Level Up?
Yeah.
He's a play-by-play guy though. You think they'd put him on? They might put him on color. They do that. I bet just Saxton might end up there again because he was there this week.
Yeah, so, you know, you could totally have Byron there and have
and he'd
Booker
take the second check. Trust
yep,
me.
Yep, yep, he would. Yeah, he would do it. And, I mean, the Byron character is – yes, I think Byron ends up back on commentary relatively quickly.
Dan Lambert in an interview said that leaving AEW was his decision and that it had run his course. I am one of those people who I'm going to miss Dan Lambert because I think he's one of the guys who could be funny but also get real heat with his promos. Some of it was cheap at times, don't get me wrong, but compared to both Stokely, who I love Stokely, but he doesn't have a sense of menace about him. And then you bring in Nana, and I love me some Prince Nana, friend of the show, Prince Nana, or at least friend of me to remind me that he's going to be on TV whenever he's on TV. So that's always nice of Prince Nana to self-promote to me. But, you know, he was always, I mean, look, he was less comedy than the other guys. Don't get me wrong, he was comedy. And this company has a problem with comedy managers at times. But I always liked Dan Lambert as a manager.
Yeah, no, I think Dan Lambert as a manager was very good. And especially when you are looking at... Even right now with the weird thing they're trying to do with MJF in this storyline, Dan Lambert would actually be the better foil for MJF.
Or accompaniment?
Both.
Okay.
Like, the whole idea right now...
Foil threw me off right there because he's
no,
a heel. I mean,
right. But they're doing this whole thing where like MJF's having a bit of a crisis of confidence, a little bit like not slotting in as easily back into his old faction-y ways. Like, yeah. If that's the story they're trying to tell, it's kind of what I got from this week's Dynamite. Thinking about Lambert with like his boomeriness or his boomer nature would be really perfect, like to be, you know, kind of yelling at MJF and have the age gap thing be part of the wedge here.
Oh, okay. I can see that then.
Yeah, whereas to your point about Stokely, he just doesn't have a really well-defined character at this point. And it's like being MJF's henchman isn't really doing anything for this guy.
He's not really that, and we'll talk about that in the Lazy River once we get to it. But Gable Stevenson now full-time at the PC after having a procedure for what is called Wolfheart. His brother killing it right now.
He's great.
So that'll be interesting. We'll talk a little Damon Kemp on
the
Lazy River.
I am so here for the Stevensons versus the Creeds. They are getting me so fired up for this match.
Hose me for that, baby.
Dude, I know. I like Julius and Damon. That is stars.
That is Steiner Brothers versus Varsity Club.
Like,
I mean,
but if both of them could talk, like. Yes. To have that level of like physicality paired with just like actually compelling and interesting character work from the both of them, like it's such a treat.
Follow up to a story last week, the documentary on Vice, Nine Lives of Vince McMahon, will be airing on Tuesday, October 18th, which is also the night of NXT Halloween Havoc and also the night of AE Dynamite being on Tuesday. So it's going to be Sophie's Choice for your DVRs, kids. But yeah, 2-hour documentary called The Nine Lives of Vince McMahon.
And I'll, of course, keep you guys posted on any gigs I have coming up on that week.
Of interest to old school people like me, Ricky Steamboat's match on November 27th in Raleigh, North Carolina at the Dorton Arena for Big Time Wrestling was announced as FTR and Ricky Steamboat versus Jay Lethal, Brock Anderson, and a mystery partner managed by Arn Anderson. It's got to be Tully. Has to be Tully, right? Legend and legend. This will be Steamboat's first match since he teamed with his son in a 2010 match in WWE Developmental. The Rock and Roll Express's last match in Raleigh, also announced for that card, against Mark and Jay Briscoe. Dude, if plane tickets weren't so expensive due to the gas right now... That is Thanksgiving weekend on Sunday. I would be in Raleigh.
Dude, that would be fun. Man, Ricky Morton is just at any age is just such a treat.
Yes.
Like, yeah, he's
I can't
he
wait for those promos.
Aged his
I cannot
style
wait
so
for
awesome.
The Briscoes to cut a promo on the Rock and Roll Express.
Yes.
It's going to be so fantastic.
Yes. Like the Briscoes, like I expect Jay to basically say, like, I intend to bury you, old man. Like, yes. I'm into it. I'm so here for this.
Yeah, I am too. And in me teeing up a softball for Chris for some kind of a joke, Bobby Fish announces making his debut as a pro boxer on November 13th at a show in Dubai that is headlined by Floyd Mayweather Jr. exhibition. Chris. Fish who had, I love this. Fish who had
qualified when he throws a kick.
Yeah, like that, well, Fish who had, yeah, Fish who had amateur MMA fights when he was younger will be 46 later this month. That dude, I can't make an appropriate joke. I really can't. No, thank you.
No, I don't have a lot. Bobby Fish.
In transaction news, turns out Bandido has signed his offer with AEW. He's coming into the company full time, I believe. Jake Hager also
looking forward to watching a physically talented man who is no good at promos die in the middle of the card. That will be a refreshing and new thing on my television screen.
You don't think Bandido gets over? You don't think Bandido, Takeshita's coming back later this month, too. He can't get a promo.
Yes, and everybody loves them for 2 to 3 months, upwards of six.
Yes, and then it's time to push them, and then they can't talk.
Right. Like we've seen this movie countless times, and I get it. These people come in, and they do a fantastic job in this spot, and It's like almost like the classic failure inside of organizations where you promote someone one rank above where they should actually be at.
Yeah.
They did such a good job at the other role. Like, these people are perfect to come in for 3 months, do a thing, work an angle, and then go on. But the idea that, like, you know, you can have a talented dude who can't talk and just write your way around this every single week, week in, week out. Like, it becomes a problem at some point or another.
I mean, we know what we're going to get. We're going to get we're having competitive feuds and matches with people in the best of three or whatever. Oh, they're both trying to be the...
And one day they're out there against MJF. And MJF Wheeler neuters this guy on TV.
Yes, pretty much. And it's one of those things where it's like all the hardcores say, oh, this is so great. And we're all saying, well, it'd be great if they build, because look, I watched Tales from the Territories on Vice this week. It was about Memphis. There's a lot of, for lack of a better term, ball washing each other around the round table. But one thing they said at the very beginning, and Jerry Jarrett said, I pumped my fist. It's like, look, wrestling is all about personal animosity that builds feuds to draw money. And I agree. It's all about personal animosity. And if you can't talk, it's hard to show that personal animosity unless you do, like, really bad beatdowns on people. So, yeah,
that really does cut to the core of, like, why do these guys flounder? It's because they are unable to express themselves. And animus is an important part of this. And facializations, I mean, in particular... if you can't speak and you're under a mask, then your best bet would be to have great facializations. But even those can only get you so far.
Well, which is why Vince takes masks off of luchadors, and it drives us nuts. But, you know, it's one of those things.
Well, no, I mean, the problem there is Bischoff. That Vince... Well, no, what Vince should be doing, and I wanted to make sure that no one takes this the wrong way. But, like, if you're, like, looking at, like, oh, I need to get this guy to connect, right? Do I take the mask off,
or do I get this manager?
Guy... give him a manager, or do I get this guy into some English classes so that he can be better at line delivery so that we can use him in confrontational engagements that require emotional transference so that this guy is just better at these beats. I love wacky, zany Asuka. And sometimes I enjoy her non-sequitorial dancing and like the fact that she clearly has no idea what's going on.
Yes.
But there are also times, Jeff, where it's clear she literally has no idea what's being said now.
No, I agree. And it's heartbreaking at times because then they don't build her up as a silent killer anymore, which is what she should be right now, because she's dancing Asuka, entertaining the fans and making people smile. Also announced by Chris Jericho on his podcast, was it an interview? I forget what it was, but Jake Hager's also signed an extension.
Well, you know, thank God. This roster is getting a little bit thin right now, Hawkins.
Yeah.
You got a lot of belts.
Good point.
You got a lot of belts, and you need contenders.
Well, you need to fill ROH.
Right. This is a hot product. I hear more and more about the Ring of Honor these days.
So does Wade Keller. Rating stuff, just to get it out of the way. AEW Dynamite, pretty good number. 1,038,033. Number two in cable originals in 18 to 49. I believe it was Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which is just a juggernaut you're never going to beat, was number one. NXT, 625,000, number 30 in cable originals. Raw, bit of a low number, but, you know, it's Monday Night Football season. That's always going to happen. 159, almost 1.6 million. Number seven in terms of cable originals in the demo.
How does that compare year over year? I feel like that would almost be the more interesting thing. Because they're a little bit up from
ago. They were up the past few weeks. Hour three took a nosedive this week because the game became close. So everybody turned to the game, of course. This is their lowest rating, at least, since July 4th in terms of that. So they've built on it. I just don't have the year-over-year numbers. SmackDown, 2.2 million, 0.54, number two among broadcast, primetime, and cable originals. So SmackDown doing pretty darn well for itself compared to Raw. Rampage, 472,000, number nine in cable originals.
So yeah, SmackDown, and I guess what that probably says, too, for people who are trying to read into that Raw number is these people are probably catching up with what happened on Raw in some way, shape, or form, even if they're not watching it because there is a live sporting event that's on. So that's my only takeaway there.
And that'll do it for the news bag. Chris, tell us a little bit about HelloFresh.
Oh my God, Jeffrey. I thought you would never ask. I thought this whole show was going to be yet again a way for you to talk about your childhood through the veil of wrestling. But no, we have an opportunity to talk about HelloFresh. What is HelloFresh? You yell it at your radio every week. Sometimes you're driving. You don't know.
Your radio.
Yes.
Okay, boomer.
No, they plug into the USB port, jerk, and then it comes through their speakers, and they call it radio. That's what they call it.
You had a Hawkins moment there. Just admit it.
I didn't. No, no, I was relevant. You're, once again, being negative. This is childhood transference. With HelloFresh, Jeffrey, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip the trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Subscribe to HelloFresh and check, open quote, save money, close quote, off your fall to-do list. I know, you had it on there. You're like, save money, bother Hawkins, listen to Shake Them Ropes, sub up to the Patreon, go down to Aiders on Saturday, save money. A little bit vague, but you can get rid of this one. HelloFresh is here. It's 25% cheaper than takeout and less expensive than grocery shopping, too. Time to cozy up and save money by cooking at home. Fall is the perfect time to experience delicious taste and unparalleled convenience of HelloFresh. Jeffrey and I tried HelloFresh at one point earlier in the year, and the experience was wonderful. It was easy. It was fun. We made meals. It was filling. I liked the burger recipe. Jeffrey did as well. Who do I cook HelloFresh with? Not Jeffrey, because he never comes and sees me. Now, if you are interested in HelloFresh, you can go to HelloFresh.com/VOW65. Whoa, not 16 anymore. No, VOW65. You use the code VOW65. What is that for? You ask? You're saying it out loud. Why is that number so high? It's 65% off free shipping. Or plus free shipping. 65% off plus free shipping. 65% off free shipping. That is also... No, well, still included. So just one more time here, just to make sure you update the offer card that surely you have in your vehicle. You write this down whenever you hear a good promo code on the radio.
On the radio.
Yeah, on the radio. HelloFresh. Go to your browser, type in http://www.hellofresh.com/vow65. Use that code vow65, V-O-W-65 for 65% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
Oh, the voice of an angel. Thank you. HelloFresh. No, that was a hell of a read there,
Feel
Chris.
Free to harmonize. Run that back if you want, listeners, and feel free to harmonize with that. Send
it
in.
Oh, I thought you were
us.
Telling me to harmonize.
No,
right now.
You could, too. We can take another pass at it.
Let's not. Because
okay,
I
that's fine. No, it's fine. We had those other things. You're trying my patience. It's okay.
I'm not trying your patience. I swear to God. Anyways, now, kids, the lazy river of wrestling criticism, as if we haven't wandered off the beach enough. Anything we watched this week, I already took off one of my things with Tales from the Territories, but we start on the beach before we get into the shallow water with a preview of this weekend's WWE Extreme Rules. The one time a year, except for all the others, that WWE gets extreme. Kind of a brave card if you think about it, Chris. I'll put it in this aspect. The two main eventing matches, or two of the three main eventing matches, are for the two women's titles, the other being Riddle and Rollins, but no Roman Reigns on this show. So it'll be a very interesting experiment to see who watches on Saturday. It is Saturday, not Sunday, from Wells Fargo Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, starting with what I think might steal the show. Six-man tag team, good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, whatever the hell that means, between the Brawling Brutes, Sheamus Ridgeholland and Butch, versus Imperium, Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci. Oh, this is going to slap. I haven't been keeping up with what's on SmackDown because it's started right now, but we're having a Gunther-Sheamus rematch on there. I assume it will not be pay-per-view level because I assume it's going to just devolve down into all six brawling to do this hard sell for the pay-per-view. But look, these six are manly men doing manly things to each other, and I'm here for it.
WWE sneakily has got a lot of like hard-hitting feuds, like either just starting or like in the early stages of getting ready to start. Like we mentioned, the Creeds and the Stevesons, this Brawling Brutes versus Imperium thing is heating up. I don't think we've reached anywhere near peak heat with these guys yet. And I think it belies Levesque's vision of a more physical style. And this is sort of like, these guys are very much his fingerprints. Definitely. So yes, I think this match is going to get time and it is going to slap, as the kids say.
Who you got winning?
I got Imperium winning.
Okay. I think Imperium should win, but I think, man, I could see this opening the card, and they're going to want people to be happy about it, so I think the Brawling Brutes win this. They pin Giovanni Vinci.
Okay.
I think that's how it goes.
Or Kaiser.
Because they're really working on Butch being... I think they're eventually going to change him back into Pete Dunne.
True. We're trying to reestablish Butch. So maybe this match runs through our boy Butch.
Main event Butch gets the win here, I think. And trust me, in Philly, that'll go over great.
Yeah.
It will.
And he was already getting the bruiserweight treatment and stuff too. The
crowd, in NXT this week, yeah.
Yes, the crowd wants Pete Dunne. They don't want Butch.
Edge versus Finn Balor with Judgment Day, Damian Priest, Dominic Mysterio, and Rhea Ripley in an I Quit match. I'll go on this one. This is going to be story time, and it's going to be convoluted. And somehow they're going to threaten Dominic Mysterio, the Judgment Day is, as a ruse to get Rey to beg Edge to quit. That's what I'm going with. So Finn Balor wins in something that makes us all groan. That's my opinion.
Edge gets tricked into quitting.
Yes.
Yeah, feels right.
Or coerced by Ray somehow.
Yeah, no, because I think the other thing here is long-term, are they done with Judgment Day? And I think the answer is clearly no. Judgment Day is a faction that is still very much got a lot of tread left on the tires. Such a crazy statement to say.
Dare I say, possibly we get Ray and AJ Styles coming down here to even things up. And because I'm actually enjoying the Finn AJ stuff. Maybe yeah, AJ no, turns.
At that point, Judgment Day could get a new member. I got a pitch for you. Slapjack.
And I'm kind of interested in Rhea Ripley being the leader of Judgment Day and being the driving force
yeah,
in it.
I mean, yeah, she would be a second choice, a slapjack.
A slapjack.
Yes. Slapjack.
Stop.
He's the mastermind.
He's not coming back. Ever.
Stop saying that. Stop saying I don't want to hear
and
that.
And if he is, it's in the form of a boomerang thanks to his former gimmick, which is Crocodile Dundee Outback Slapjack. And you're not going to get the Slapjack name on there. It's just going to be him as this bad Australian.
I don't want the man who played Slapjack.
Oh, yes,
I want
you
Slapjack.
You're in love with the man who played
him. I want Slapjack. I don't want the guy who played him. You know, it's like, that's like, you don't want to hang out with the dude who works in the Mickey Mouse suit when you go to Disneyland. You want to go and hang out with Mickey Mouse. This is how I feel about Slapjack. I'm not trying to hang out with Shane Thorne.
Shane Thorne?
Yeah. No. I want Slapjack back.
Speaking of slapping, Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross with Scarlett in a strap match. God help me, please do not let this be the four corners type of strap match.
This is my concern, is that this might be two story times in a row, right? Like, because if this is the match that Wyatt comes back during.
Oh my God. Could you imagine them not just having this be like the NWA strap matches where it's just you're connected with a strap and you try and beat somebody and you get it's the four corners type of thing and Scarlett ends up or Bray ends. Oh dear Lord. But that's what's going to happen.
You know, here's the thing. I'm going to say Cross wins this.
Yes.
So then maybe I need to like think about the retribution thing and maybe Edge does beat Balor.
Okay.
But, like, that's not the end of it. I don't know. It seems weird to have the heels go over in story two times in a row. That's the only way that this may hesitate.
I don't think Fiend comes back in the Karrion Kross match. I think he comes back in another match and we'll be on it in a second. But in a fight pit match with Daniel Cormier, who's always been interested in WWE, serving as the special guest referee, Matt Riddle versus Seth freaking Rollins. How do you see this, Chris?
I got Rollins winning.
I got Rollins winning via Daniel Cormier doing something to Riddle. I think this show is going to be overbooked as hell. And I think we're going to turn on Papa H for a week. But I think Seth Rollins wins. And I think Daniel Cormier gets brought in to do a little bit of training and leads up to a WrestleMania match with Matt Riddle.
All sounds right to me.
Okay. Let's do the Raw Women's Championship. Bianca Belair versus Alexa Bliss with Alexa Bliss and Asuka taking on Aunt Pam with Damage Control, Dakota Kai and Io Sky. Did me saying Alexa Bliss set off your Alexa? Or is that
no.
Me?
No,
oh, that's mine.
That's yours. That's
I have my headphones on.
No, okay, all right, yeah.
screw you. I can't say that loud. Shut up. No, I gotta yell at my spy.
This is what Alexa Bliss does with her doll.
This is
I think this could be also where The Fiend makes his debut. Certainly. I'm going to say Damage Control wins this because,
Jesus, it started playing music. Hold on. I got to go for a sec. Bam.
Yeah, I'm going to say Damage Control probably ends up winning this match. And so then when we're thinking about the predictions here, the one thing that I hesitate on slightly is just that we've got the heels going over. We've got storyline multiple times in a row here. And I don't know. When we were thinking about long-form booking, this is potentially the one issue with long-form booking, right? When we're thinking about doing something like that, you do maybe run into junctions where you have essentially three of the same thing happening in a row here. You have in the opening match with Judgment Day and Edge, heels going over in a storyline-based fashion. In the second match, we also have heels going over in a storyline-based fashion. And then in this one, especially with the re-debut of Alexa, or of The Fiend, potentially, and having implications for Alexa Bliss, it feels as though Damage Control will also go over here as
yes.
well.
Yes.
And so, that, I mean, right now, what I was saying to the listeners while you were fighting with technology is that we have three storyline-heavy matches in which the heels seem to be going over.
Yeah. Boy, did I not... I mean, it was okay, but the Bayley go-home promo... Y'all know I love me some Aunt Pam. I do. I just wish she was less of the ding-dong hello, Bayley, in this role. Because it feels like Damage Control isn't getting over as a vicious squad. They're getting over as kind of a... You know, they're good wrestlers, but they're going to lose here and there type of squad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They're not dominating.
Yes, they are not a dominant faction to then put baby faces against. They are kind of a they're a mid-card B villain faction that you're kind of waiting for like Becky Lynch to come in and run through. Which, you know, I think people of the talent level of Bayley and Io deserve a higher calling than that. I think the Fiend shows up here. I think Alexa Bliss is drawn to her. It distracts everybody. Bayley, you know, and then it allows Io and Dakota to be two on two versus Bianca and Asuka, while Bayley climbs the ladder, and she wins the title. Who did you have winning?
No, I have the heels winning.
Oh yeah, Bayley winning also?
Yeah, yeah. I got Bayley winning.
And then we set up Bayley to probably get beat by Becky Lynch, which I think Bayley deserves a WrestleMania main event. She's the only horsewoman who hasn't had one. She, you know, she was a host when she was at her hottest. It was just ridiculous. And then she had the pandemic stuff. But you know, this isn't about deserve, it's about money, and they still think Ronda versus Becky is the money match for Mania. So we'll see. Speaking of which, Liv Morgan, the champion, versus Ronda Rousey in Extreme Rules for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I think Liv retains here. I think Ronda probably wins at Survivor Series. Or that there's... I mean, it's weird. Either of these women's belts could change hands in that women's War Games match, and they could make the stipulation for whoever gets the pin becomes the champion type of a thing. Just to breed dissension within the two teams' ranks as to, you know, getting people in there or not. I don't know, though. I could very well see Ronda Rousey winning this match while Liv puts up a noble effort of seeming tough, and they put it over hard on commentary, and it's just, hey, that was your first title reign. Let's see if we can build you up as a real character and see if you can be marketable. But personally, I'd keep this on Liv Morgan because I just don't like Ronda Rousey as champ, to be honest, and she doesn't really need it. She's always a presence of being a badass. So,
yeah, there's just no value added into putting the belt back onto Ronda, especially right now. I would have it on Liv and have, like, you know, even Liv and Bayley sort of feuding. You know,
well, let me give you the plan, I think, is for Ronda and Becky for a title unification, much like to then crown one of them, probably Becky, as the quote-unquote Roman Reigns.
I see.
Does that change your mind?
Make her Becky two belts again?
Yes.
Let's see where Becky's popularity level is when she gets back, but that just feels like something I've seen before.
Yeah, they're basically running that story back.
Yeah, it seems like a movie I've seen before and not a movie I necessarily felt like, oh man, you know, they're told stories left here. Gotta, like, I don't have that feeling.
I'll do one better. I think Liv beats Ronda here somehow, but it's to help set up a Charlotte feud. somewhere. I think Charlotte's coming back to take this title off of Liv at some point. So we'll see. I'll be very interested to see how this show does. I'll be very interested to see if they overbook it or not, because it feels like, every match we've been through, we've overbooked it to a point where I wouldn't want to watch this show.
And then these quote unquote overbookings feel like very necessary things that need to happen inside of these matches, and
because they don't want
to
be
underbook
anybody.
To underbook it would make these matches feel like, what would be the point of Damage Control versus the three baby faces without like some sort of fiend thing, really?
If you want to make Bayley really strong, go over Bianca clean with the ladder match. I mean, that would be the thing to do.
Right, but I mean they've also already weakened up that team so much going into this, with Asuka sporting the foot injury. So
yeah, that's very, very true. But we'll see. So that ends our preview section. Now, anything you want to talk about in wrestling, we can do it. Chris, you go.
I feel like we've basically covered the WWE side here, more or less, other than continue to love the Sami Zayn and Bloodline stuff. Just really, really good stuff. Braun Strowman, it's like they're doing the Wardlow push with Braun Strowman. I will say that the Wardlow match this week against Cage was more of a step in the right direction than not in the right direction, and about as good of a match as you're going to get out of Cage.
Did you like the way that they were kind of doing, can you top this in terms of big guys doing small guy moves?
That is Cage's MO anyways. This is what the guy does. He's a huge guy who does rather incoherent matches in terms of storytelling. I thought that he, was as giving as I've ever seen him in terms of selling for Wardlow, with the exception of after taking the Powerbomb Symphony, somehow he manages to get back up to his feet in relatively short order, which made me laugh.
Gotta get my heat back, brother.
No, that cracked me up. Like, no. Dude, you're obliterated. You're dead. You're dead.
Bobby Fish kicking out of three thing, yeah.
Yeah, no, in this case, he got pinned, but he was, back on his feet within 10 seconds and, doing a beatdown, and, that should not have been happening. I think it's a better pairing for Wardlow than what he's been getting, but, I'm thinking, with Strowman, it seems like they're just doing a much better job doing a very similar story with this guy.
I am going to criticize AEW a little bit from a different perspective. It's from the TV writing perspective. And when you're outlining a show in terms of beats and stuff like that, you don't want two similar beats on a show back to back, unless it's a pattern setting up to something in the last part of the show. And what I mean by this is that both the MJF firm dealings and the Jay Lethal Sanjay Dutt story and the matches within were both the same thing. And that should not be happening on a professional wrestling show where you have 50 years of history to steal from. You have all sorts of things to steal from in this, but instead it's the reluctant heel saying no, no, no in two different segments. And then it doesn't really pay off in the end, unless you count that Chris Jericho looking a little bit guilty about hitting Daniel Garcia with the belt at the end of the show, which I don't think was worth either the overrun or the or the melodrama, to be honest with you. But to get back to it.
No, the MJF scene being followed up with Jay Lethal basically doing the exact same scene. We're being consistent here. We criticized the preview show, or the show we just previewed, for the similar thing where it looks like that's going to happen there. It seems to me that once you get your rundown, and you're looking at what all the finishes are, you just need to stop yourself and go, oh, we can't have these two right back. Question if you need to actually do them both this way. But certainly you can't have them right next to each other. There's a quality control thing that's really missing on this
and
show.
And
right
also,
now.
I think what you're going to do end up doing here is say that the MJF one was a swerve and the Jay Lethal one wasn't, so you can feed them to Jericho. Now, my problem with the firm thing is that that story hasn't been earned yet. And it's a story to tell, but it's great. It's okay. I have the firm on retainer to protect my myself and to protect the belt and to help me be the world champion. Okay, great. But you need to then tell the story that then the firm decides to go interfere a few times and MJF is for it. And then there's a time where they do it where he's like, what are you guys doing out here? And then there's a time they do it
and
where
that's
he's
a story that makes
where
more
he's
sense
against
once he's
it.
Champion.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, like
yes.
It makes infinitely more sense when he's
when
be
they
doing
go
this story.
Rogue and they decide right. to be in it for themselves. Right. That's a story
and
to tell
now,
when he's
and,
champion.
And that creates real doubt as to whether or not he's going to be able to kind of keep it together because, like, is his own house in order? Are the firm going to turn on him? You know, like, yeah, like that. That's a championship.
These are mercenaries, and they're going to be out for themselves eventually once the money runs out or whatever. Yeah,
right. Stokely might get big ideas that maybe he could have Big Will Morrissey get the belt off of MJF.
Yeah, don't do this on your second interaction on weekly television between the firm and MJF, because the only other one before this was the Morrissey stuff. So yeah, I just it was inexplicable, and then the. And then to then follow it up with a very similar match and a very similar angle. I just thought, man, I said a little stronger on the Dynamite show, which I do over on Fight Game Media. I said, look, Tony has all these ingredients. I'm having a question about whether or not he can cook at times. And he's been doing this for 3 years. He's been the only booker in this company for 3 years. That's a long time to book this much television and not be burned out a little bit. Even the best bookers never had that kind of a lot of longevity unless you were Vince McMahon, and nobody really liked his longevity. So yeah, I question that quite a bit. Your go.
Yeah, I completely agree. Prince Nana for me, I think is a very goofy addition. Like
we end money.
Like it felt like a weird meta comedy thing. Like he's like I don't know what the term is for, like, the, you know, like the pizza guy, like these characters that randomly show up at
trope.
AEW.
He's a
what?
Trope. He's a
yes,
trope.
Yeah. Like Prince Nana feels like a trope character. And at a time where this show does need to kind of regain its footing for me. Yes, Moxley had a nice speech a few weeks ago. That one speech alone does not Terra Firma make. I think that Prince Nana, I don't know. Like, it makes the Gates of Agony seem goofy. Like, yes. They seem like a legitimate team. And then paired with Prince Nana, like, I don't know.
I think the thinking here is that the comedy of Nana offsets the
menace.
Menace of the Gates of Agony, and it doesn't.
It
now,
does not.
Now I nope. will. I will defend Nana in this case, because look, y'all know I loves me some Tully Blanchard. Y'all knows I wanted me some Tully Blanchard Enterprises all over this television. Prince Nana is a great in-match manager. If you watch him, he's always working. He's always yelling. He's always either encouraging his guy or yelling at the ref or whatever. He is a better. And his reactions are always on time. I think it's partly due to being younger than Tully and really knowing the business of being a manager. I think Nana's a better manager than Tully Blanchard was. I gotta be honest with you. Blanchard would bring the heat on the promos. He is a far better promo than Prince Nana will ever be. But Prince Nana in the bell-to-bell stuff is better than Tully on this end. And I'll even defend this. I think Moxley's promo this week was pretty damn good.
Yeah, and then I guess my next thought here is the Ring of, insofar as this show has a meta storyline right now, it is the introduction of AEW Universe 2, aka Ring of Honor. And let's run with the idea that that's effectively a storyline. It's not a very interesting one.
Earth 2, where it's
yes.
2006 all over again and Ring
yes,
of Honor
Earth
exists.
2, yes. Earth 2, where Chris Jericho is doing a bizarro parody of WWE, a sports entertainment, like, iteration that is the former management style. Like, it's not even the current one. So it's like a rib on, like, what is now, I'm so glad to say this, a bygone era, Jeffrey.
Yes.
Yeah, he's really an anachronistic sort of gimmick. The deadline here is not actually an interesting enough storyline to build an Earth 2 around.
Love that gimmick. I love calling them the deadline. Because it's true. Because, I mean, even you watch the Anna Jay Ty Conti interaction with Charisma Machine Sky Blue and Madison Rain. And
Madison Rain and Sky Blue were just dazzling. It was like the sun radiating off, just the personality in those two.
Oh, I forgot to mention on my news that Saraya has been cleared by Doc Samson. So
there you go.
But I like that four way, or the six woman tag. We'll go into that maybe a little bit in a sec. But I want to praise and then snark a little NXT here real quick before I go back to AEW. Once again, Damon Kemp is fantastic, and so are the Creed brothers. And I'd love to have them be, if they all get brought up to the main roster to be the Diamond Mine again, I would not be upset by this. Because they can all, I mean, Damon Kemp doing WWE style promos that well, this quick, is amazeballs. Because everybody was putting money on his brother being the guy because they had so much invested in him. But maybe that the guy you don't think about, who has more personality and may not be the athlete that his brother is the guy to do this. And he is fantastic. Now for the snark. What are they? This Grayson Waller, who it turns out I met at a PWG show, because he posted a picture of himself with Candice LeRae at PWG wearing this outfit. I go, I talked to that guy. I did not realize that was Grayson Waller. Anyways, Roxanne Perez is a character you need to protect. Like you need to wrap it in bubble wrap and then more bubble wrap and put it in steel and then in a safe and then in a fireproof safe and in a third safe and a fourth safe to protect her. Why? Because good baby faces, pure baby faces in WWE always get booked like morons or end up being scripted like morons. And this came very, very close to killing all of her goodwill because she was snarky and sarcastic. And I don't look, there's a fine line between having a baby face who stands up for herself, himself, and having one that has way too heelish tendencies and shades of gray. And this was a little bit more of the latter with her being snarky towards Sky Blue 2 Electric Boogaloo Cora Jade. I did not like this. I know other people praised her. I thought her delivery was fine, but I just thought the scripting for Roxanne Perez, who is a treasure in NXT, let's say that, as a pure, pure baby face, I did not understand this, and it flustered me a bit, Chris.
Yeah, I'm in concurrence with you on that. Another angle that I knew I was going to get sour on eventually, but we've arrived at that point, is the Hank Walker stuff.
Oh.
Hank, as the head of security who occasionally wrestles once in a blue moon, is a legitimate way, in an interesting way, of making your security force more credible. Hank needs to look less like Seth Rogen and more like the guy they used to have in the 90s who looked like he could like murder someone. You know, like in like the mid 90s in WWF, they had that like really jacked dude who always wore like the beret thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Wait a second. Say that again.
The head of security guy they used to have working Raw in like the mid 90s who wore like a beret and was totally jacked.
God, no, I don't remember.
Did he
wrestle also?
No, he never did. No, he never did. But he used to, like, on WWF, they used to have a very menacing looking, like, head of security guy who would, like, he was, like, the crowd control dude. And, like,
okay.
Yeah, huge arms. I remember this.
I'll take a look for him. Hold on.
But I like the idea of a head of security who occasionally, like,
okay. Yeah. No. Now, Jim Dotson played between 95 and 2001. He was head of protective services, played college football too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember this guy now.
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, he passed away in 2015. Oh,
I'm down with the idea of a head of security guy who is more than just like a red shirt. So, like, I mean, for example, when a big, like, he can actually take out a little low-level heel or whatever.
Right.
But, like, when a big menacing, like, you know, real heel shows up, like, and they obliterate head of security Hank or whoever it is, that means something more than just eliminating Hank's red shirts. But, like, I don't need this guy to be, like, a full-on character. I don't need this guy to have a journey.
Breaking news, Legado del Fantasma has debuted as a unit on SmackDown, along including Electra Lopez. So the entire unit is up there. And apparently, according to people talking to me right now, they're not getting over quite as well as we had hoped. But we'll see. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, I mean, what are they sending them up with, you know?
That's true, too.
They got to have something.
Oh, my God. It's those guys from NXT.
It's Legado. It's like that's not going to be enough.
That nobody watches other than, like, a third of our audience on the main roster. Yeah. How about some video packages to hype them coming? How about that? Oh, maybe I missed it because I haven't watched SmackDown in a while.
It's funny. DJ Z, also known as Joaquin Wilde, is actually like a very entertaining personality. Mm-hmm. He can be good.
Chris, I'm going to tell a story, or I'm going to go on this six-woman tag, which was very good on Dynamite. Don't get me wrong. I just don't understand as a setup to kill Willow Nightingale again, because you can't have her beat Jade Cargill tonight because you haven't told that story yet. And I know Tony's getting a little bit mad at us, those of us like me who say he doesn't tell stories. He doesn't tell stories.
He doesn't tell stories.
I said a long time ago, I thought with Chris Statlander at that Willow Nightingale might be the person to beat Jade. But we got to go on that journey. I liked that she got the win here. That would have been a nice first step. And then she goes through and starts beating people.
And she has to get over winning. This aw shucks happy to be here character.
Because that didn't work in the promo at all. The promo was terrible.
Oh my God, it was really bad.
You know, it was very stilted.
I guess maybe this is what happens when you get a little bit older, but like you want this like happy-go-lucky dope who is terribly naive about the way of the world to like lose, not get obliterated, but like get their ass kicked a little bit so that they can like learn the lesson that life isn't like that, schmuck.
And then they turn and they finally get serious a bit. The problem is this will be the third time if she loses, losing to Jade Cargill. And the story is to say the third time's the charm. And after the second loss, you start building her, not after the third loss, building her up for the fourth match against Jade Cargill, which is, this is driving me nuts. I don't think they have a plan on who to win. Because
you don't say there was no plan for this Jade Cargill thing. No way.
Well, I think the plan was probably Statlander.
Step one, put the belt on her. Step two.
Profit.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Actually, step two, question mark.
Step two, step question three, mark. Step three, profit. Yeah,
yes.
Right. No,
they're underpants gnomes. Yes.
We've been very much stuck on that step two. Give her henchmen various types.
Well, that's also the problem with long-term booking, but not doing week to week. Oh, I'm going to put the belt on Statlander. Well, Statlander's gone. Now what? Ugh. Throws off all my plans. Yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, the promo didn't do much for Will, because Willow was very sports entertainment during that promo, I thought. I was just like, God. She's so likable naturally. Just let her be natural as opposed to trying to play up, you know, the dancing kind of thing. Oh, look,
I
have personality.
I'm here to have fun.
Oh, that is so Jericho appreciation.
It's weird. It's like,
there you go. She turns heel and becomes the person who likes having fun during the match.
It's funny because, like, this is the sort of stuff that Jericho, like, the worst part about the Jericho Appreciation Society stuff is, like, the jokes aren't even that funny. Like, the pizza party and the bucket hat. Like, there are much better things. Like, sports entertainers love having fun, and Jericho making it a point to, like, have everyone have a lot of fun because that's one of the most important parts of the business.
And since we've been criticizing AEW a lot, let's give some praise where credit is due. I really liked the MJF Yuta match.
The match itself was good. Yeah, right. Once you get through that first commercial break and they start doing the mat work.
I mean, the first half to me seemed slow motion at times, and it felt like they were stretching for time.
Yeah,
a little bit. And you know, MJF not putting much behind doing those clotheslines going into the break, but once it got down to the mat and they were doing all, and it really started getting over, it was fantastic. You know, I agree with you. The Wardlow Brian Cage match was really, really good. I really liked it a lot. The six woman tag was really, really good. It's just, I need feuds and I need heat and I need building of things. For me personally, and I know I'm different than other fans, and fans complain to me about this all the time, and I don't care because there are other fans who agree with me who say I'm correct on this. So take what you want and pay for it. But if the feud isn't built up to a certain kind of degree, I don't want to see them in the ring together with one another. I don't think the match then continues the feud. I think the feud can be built on it, but there also has to be a certain way that match is performed to then build a feud, to make it more violent, more angry, more animus, to then put a stipulation on it. That's just me, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, in the same way that I don't
just watch...
I had
a good
match. I don't just watch action movies for the fight scenes. The
yes.
ones that actually engage me is we're building up the whole time for a big, big fight. Like, I mean, this is why I've praised it on the show before, but like, this is why Cobra Kai, when it works well, is so rewarding, at least to me, is they spend a lot of time developing out the story and the feuds. And then when they get to the big fight scene, you're like, yeah, all right, let's have the fight. Like you're ready for it. The wrestling operates on a very similar formula.
Jackie Chan loses his appeal after you watch three movies in a row.
Right. Yeah, because he's just fighting. Right. Yes. Yeah, it's just fight. No, it's good the first time. The second time, you're like, yeah, still got it. Third time, you're like, it was.
All right, I've seen this kind of
yes,
stunt,
right,
and it's impressive,
right.
And I appreciate what he's doing here. But you know what? I like a little plot in here.
Right. Yeah. No, I want a little characterization. I mean, you want to feel something with these characters.
Yes.
And it doesn't need to be a deep feeling.
No.
But it does need to be.
It can be as simple
feeling.
As one guy comes out and says, I don't like you. I mean, that's the easiest feud in the world. Do that. Your turn. I have nothing else in my queue.
In your queue. I guess I'll echo the thought on, I did already echo the thought on Dynamite here. And then other than that, yeah, man. I definitely don't want to seem like I loved every minute of like NXT specifically. Like a lot of stuff we didn't talk about here was just there. But like Carmelo Hayes or the Mensa.
Oh, that's
Von Wagner and Andre Chase.
Carmelo Hayes is so awesome.
He's so awesome. I will fight anyone who says otherwise. I know, like, we're down on this NXT 2.0 as a brand, but, like, when you actually look at the class of talent that's down there right now, they got a lot of effing studs down there. Between, like, Ivy Nile, who is definitely, like, a talent in terms of, like, just a raw physical specimen, to the Creeds and Damon Kemp, who we've mentioned glowingly on numerous occasions here. Braun Breaker's no slouch. Like, he's putting it together. Andre Chase is a fine little character, and Carmelo Hayes is a stud. And of course Roxanne Perez. This is a pretty solid developmental class down there. And let us not forget about Pretty Deadly.
Yeah, Pretty Deadly, and the Cursed by Kevin Owens was a great line, but that segment was garbage. But Carmelo Hayes winning the match against Bootleg Kofi. Bootleg Kofi's in NXT, and he's gonna be in this ladder match, and he's gonna be pretty good in it, I think. And they're trying to give him some characterization, which is nice. I like that. But going on commentary, I used to ask for setbacks for Christmas so I could overcome them and then stunt on these hoes, which got a huge pop for me because that's a Donald Glover Childish Gambino reference. I cried at that. And then I absolutely love the staging of Wes Lee jumping into the frame as he's doing the commentary and him not expecting it and just starting a beat down there. They framed that so well. especially with Carmelo just talking his stuff. He's going to work on the main roster. And for a guy his size, that's saying something. Now, Trick Williams needs some work if he's going to survive on the main roster, because you can get bodyguards that suck in the ring. Not that he sucks, but he needs work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man? No, he's sort of a weird non-entity in the ring. Like, he's not really a big guy. He's not really, like, a fast guy, not a technical guy. Like, he's just sort of there. The thing that he does best is hype manning for Carmelo. But, like, you get a lot of people who can hype man. If anything, Carmelo would need a hype man who's smaller than him, not bigger than him.
Or they will look at him and go, we need a hype man who can also work.
Oh, I have one last thought. Okay. To end the show here. Top Dollar, you could not pay me enough money to take a wrestling move from this man. That man is so unsafe. Unsafe at any speed, like the Ralph Nader book.
Can you describe a move for me? Because I haven't seen him in a while.
Last week, Hit Row was on SmackDown. Like, they have... Their finisher is that, like, he does, like, a back by drop, and there's the drop kick or whatever.
Yeah.
But prior to that, we have Top Dollar getting the heat, and he does, like, you know, kind of like a pickup, like a crucifix, like you're going to do a fallaway slam or something like that. Ooh. He is having the damnedest time keeping these humans up.
He's doing a crucifix? Oh,
he's not trying to do a cruise. I'm saying he's picking him up like
The fallaway slam?
Yeah,
the old laser,
the sack of shit. The sack of shit toss, yeah.
Yes.
He's trying to get someone up for that, and he also has this move where he's like trying to like carry two people at once to exhibit strength, and he does not have the control to do this safely.
Yes. That takes safety and needing to,
is he
better or worse than Viscera? Because actually Viscera I kind of like, to be honest with you.
I actually like Viscera.
Let's withdraw that question, because there are big men who are worse. Yeah,
he's at like the Nia Jax level of unsafe for me.
Okay.
Yeah, like that's
I get the feeling that they're going to combine Trick and Carmella with this to try and get that, to try and save the act, because I just don't think Ashanti.
Carmelo as the front of Hit Row could reboot that thing. Because no. Top Dollar, I mean, the other thing is, yes, right now that act, the formula is, I guess we're going to try to run this through Top Dollar. He stinks. No, don't do that. Go and get Carmelo.
And we'll have breaking news to end the show. According to Fightful, our friends over there, John Moxley assigned a 5-year extension with AEW.
Hey, good for Moxley. He's the best champion that company has ever had.
Is he the ace? Is he now the ace? Like,
he is the ace of that company. Okay. He is the ace of that company.
I agree.
No, it's not even close. It's not like we can talk about. I know we didn't necessarily spend enough on the 3-yearsness of AEW or whatever, but like, just to end on that kind of thought, he is the best of the champions that they have had. He is far and away the best. He is the most on brand. He is the least drama. He delivers the best matches
and the best promos.
He's the best that they've had so far, and that's not bad. That's not bad. But yeah, and he's definitely the best they've had. And so get that contract. He deserves it.
I will end with this question then: do you let MJF beat him?
I think that's where they're going.
I think they have to, in order to see if they want to re-sign MJF.
Yeah. I think you have to. I would have... I don't know. I guess I would have someone maybe... I'd have someone else beat Moxley, like Kingston, for 1 week, and then have MJF take the belt off of Kingston. Basically, like, tease that we're going to get this, like, Eddie title reign. And start MJF like by breaking everybody's hearts that we're not going to get to see what would have been an absolutely dazzling Eddie Kingston world title reign.
Wow, that sounds sarcastic.
It was a little bit sarcastic. Because there are people who really want this, and I don't think it would be that good. I think the best thing that you could do is put the belt on him for a week, have MJF screw him out of it, and then Eddie Kingston goes insane because of this.
Eddie Kingston, and he does not need the belt. He
he wants revenge on MJF for the rest of this title run. You can even have him be the pivotal reason why MJF ultimately loses loses the belt. That 1 year down the line, Eddie Kingston ultimately returns the screw that he never forgot. But no, like, I think if you're going to make Kingston champion ever, and I don't know that you should, it should be for like 2.5 weeks.
He is the people's champ. He does not need a title.
No, he doesn't need a run, but you should make it for like 2.5 weeks and have MJF take it right off of him.
We will end there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. This is on Twitter. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. It'll update you when new episodes are uploaded. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Network. We'd like to once again thank HelloFresh, VOW65 for 65% off and free shipping.
That's... Upgrade or update your promo cards, people. It's not too late.
Yes, HelloFresh.com/VOW65. I am on Fight Game Media every Wednesday doing the Dynamite show with the hot takes on Dynamite. There's a bunch of shows over there as well. For a bunch of variety of things. They are a lot like Voices of Wrestling, but $5 a month will get you my show on the Patreon there. You can hear all the things that I don't bring up here on Shake Them Ropes. Chris also has a Patreon. He'd like to tell you about it now.
My name is Chris Novembrino. I am the music teacher to the stars. And I'm also going to be at 8 Airs here Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Gonna be at 8 Airs again, 10 to 1 a.m. on Sunday, going into Monday morning. Start your week off right with a little bit of vitamin N. That's vitamin Novi, baby. If you want guitar lessons, bass lessons, drum lessons, music theory lessons, recording lessons, all those can be available. Feel free to contact me on Instagram at Dr_Nov. Feel free to sub up to the Patreon for Don't Worry About the Government. As I announced earlier this week on Twitter, I'm like stepping back from doing that for a little while here because of time constraints and just needing to like have some me time that I'm not getting on a regular enough basis here. But I would love to have your Buck a show. I will be dropping back in when I come back, and you only get charged $1 when I put out a show. So if you could, if you would, go to patreon.com/DWATG and feel free to sub up for $1 or take one of my fantastic guitar lessons. Isn't that right, Jeff? Fantastic.
Fan friggin' tastic.